The headlines this hour: the Palestinian president slams Israel for committing war crimes in Gaza as the death toll from the Israeli strikes against the territory rises to over 220. Palestinian resistance groups launch fresh rocket attacks on Israel, retaliation for the regime's deadly onslaught at the Gaza Strip. Also coming up, Israeli forces killed two more Palestinians in the West Bank amid growing anger in the occupied territory at Israeli strikes on Gaza. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The Palestinian president has slammed Israel for carrying out what he calls organized state terrorism and war crimes in Gaza.
What the occupation is doing in Gaza, including vicious attacks on civilians, deliberate shelling of residential areas and institutions, destruction of infrastructure, as well as the killing of women, elderly, and children, is organized state terrorism carried out by the Israeli occupation and war crimes punishable by international law. We won't spare any efforts to bring those responsible in front of international courts.
Mahmoud Abbas made the comments after Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki urged the International Criminal Court to investigate Israeli war crimes. The ICC is already carrying out investigations into the regime's atrocities during an earlier war on Gaza. Over 2,100 Palestinians were killed in the 7 weeks of Israeli aggression in 2014. Israeli warplanes and tanks have conducted new strikes on the Gaza Strip on the 10th day of the regime's aggression against the besieged territory. Several locations across the besieged territory, including Gaza City, Khan Yunis, and Jabalia, were targeted again today. At least four more Palestinians, including a journalist, lost their lives. That brings to 225 the number of Gazans killed since Israel started pounding Gaza last Monday. Nearly half of the victims are women and children. So far, over 1,500 Palestinians have also been injured and more than 52,000 displaced. The Israeli Prime Minister has said the regime has no time frame for ending its onslaught against the sliver. Benjamin Netanyahu also said that Tel Aviv, quote, does not rule out anything. International humanitarian organizations have highlighted the devastation caused by over a week of Israeli airstrikes and shelling on the Gaza Strip. A UK-based charity, Save the Children, says 50 schools have been damaged in Israeli attacks on besieged territory. It says that nearly around 42,000 Palestinian children have also been impacted by the bombing. The organization called on Israel to adhere to international humanitarian law to protect the children. Earlier, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees also said that tens of thousands of Palestinians have been forced to take shelter in schools due to Israeli airstrikes. The agency also appealed to the international community for $37 million in immediate assistance. On Tuesday, Israel opened a single border crossing, allowing some fuel trucks into Gaza, but food convoys were unable to reach there. Palestinian resistance groups have launched fresh attacks on Israel in retaliation for the regime's deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip. The Al-Qassam brigades have fired mortar shells at near Oz settlement in Eshkol region, southern Israel. The group also fired rockets into Eshkol, where Israeli media reported casualties without specifying. Rocket sirens also sounded in Zikim and Net Hasara settlements, as well as the city of Ashkelon. In the past days, Palestinian resistance groups have also conducted rocket attacks on Tel Aviv. The groups have promised more attacks if Israel does not stop its airstrikes on Gaza. A dozen Israelis have so far been killed in the Palestinian retaliatory attacks. Ashraf Shannon is our correspondent, joining us from Gaza City. Ashraf, what do you have for us?
Yes, Israel continues to pound the Gaza Strip. Just minutes ago, less than a minute ago, actually, Israeli fighter jets fired at least three rockets to the north of the enclave, possibly killing more Palestinians and maiming more Palestinians, destroying more infrastructure, homes, buildings, anything you can think of. The Israeli regime has been bombing and destroying for the 2 billion inhabitants of Gaza. I can still hear loud explosions from the Mediterranean, with the Israeli gunboats hitting the coastal area of the Gaza Strip. They have destroyed at least a dozen cafeterias that people in the summer used to go to for no reason. Right now, we're standing in front of one of the buildings that was bombed a few days ago, less than 2 days ago, and the extent of that damage that Israel's Israeli fighter jets have been using bunker buster smart bombs to cause as much havoc, as much destruction as possible. This is just one building. This is the front of the building. If we go to the back of that building, at least a dozen homes are not inhabitable anymore. Are not habitable anymore because of what Israel has done over the last 10 days. This is just one out of hundreds. The UN was saying 450, but actually the number is over 600. I mean, we're talking about full destruction, but partial destruction, when they talk about partial destruction, they are only, they're not counting that those homes that were partially destroyed. People cannot go back there because they're afraid of UXOs, unexploded ordnance that have killed many Palestinians after Israeli wars. And now the situation, the humanitarian situation, is only getting worse day after day as the world keeps turning a blind eye to Israeli crimes because of the backing that the Israeli regime has been getting from all U.S. administration, including that of Joe Biden's.
And if you can tell us about the hospitals, how they're making out.
Hospitals, even before this onslaught, were struggling to deal with COVID-19, to deal with the hundreds of seriously injured people who were shot and wounded and in critical condition during the Great March of Return rallies when Israeli snipers were taking aim at innocent protesters, women, children, elderly people. They were shooting them like sitting ducks in the east of the enclave. And now with the COVID pandemic, 3 days ago, for 3 days now, the hospitals in Gaza cannot, the only laboratory in Gaza that tests for COVID-19 is not working anymore. So the hospitals, the Ministry of Health does not know how many cases were infected today or yesterday or the day before. In addition, the International Committee of the Red Cross, the UN, and also the Ministry of Health and local NGOs and international NGOs have warned of the dire conditions inside the hospitals and clinics because of lack of medicines, lack of surgical supplies, and also lack of electricity. Because no electricity, that means you cannot operate on wounded people.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Let's get Kent Stone in here, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton. Kent Stone, we're looking, and we just heard what has happened pretty much in terms of the devastation. You got infrastructure, you got hospitals, you got residential buildings that have been targeted. And just as of 2 days ago, we had our correspondent say that almost every city and town in the Gaza Strip has been hit. Of course, it's a very tiny enclave there. You roughly have 2 million people living in, about 300 kilometers, I'm not too sure, which is called the third densely populated area in the world. Why is Israel continuing its offensive, do you think?
Israel is continuing its illegal attacks on the Palestinians because it doesn't know what else to do. It is an apartheid state that has been put into place there by the United States of America in the Middle East, the oil-rich Middle East, and it is there to keep, to put down the Palestinian nation and all the surrounding nations of the Middle East, the Lebanese nation, the Syrian nation, the Iranian nation, and this is its job. It is a pit bull on a leash that the United States uses to keep countries in line. But I'll tell you something very important. This latest Israeli massacre on Gaza has shown that there's been a tectonic shift in world public opinion in favor of the Palestinian cause. And in Canada, this was reflected in big demonstrations from coast to coast in every major city on short notice, including here in the city of Hamilton, where we had the largest demonstration, pro-Palestinian demonstration ever. And we endorsed it, we supported it, we attended it. Canadians are incensed that the Canadian government, the Trudeau government, which has tools in its hand to punish Israel for its crimes is making mealy-mouthed statements of concern. The Canadian government, and the and people know it on the street, the Canadian government has in its hands the tools such as cutting off military sales to Israel, such as ending or suspending the Canada Free Trade Agreement, such as ending or suspending the Canada-Israel security arrangement, such as ending the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund, which funds the illegal settlements in Palestine, and finally ending the illegal Israeli recruitment of Jewish Canadians into the IDF. So Trudeau has the tools, and he's not using them. Canadians are incensed, and people across the world are angry at their governments for not taking action after all these decades of oppression and occupation.
You know, we've heard this statement before, and pardon me for addressing this question this way, but, you know, I'm trying to really understand, engage what you have said, along with many other analysts at this point. You termed it as a tectonic shift when it comes to the issue of Palestine. We've heard other people also say that this time is different. This time we're seeing an Israel, for example, that has been weakened. We've seen the rockets actually make their statements. And come to think of it, I'd like to get your reaction on this particular statement that came from Hamas, because I think it's rather important. And what it has said, the Hamas spokesperson, is this is in response to the U.S. President Joe Biden asking for a de-escalation call. Hamas has said Israel needs to end its aggression in Jerusalem and its bombardment of Gaza. Once that happens, there can be room to talk about arrangements to restore calm. You can see that the issue of Jerusalem is top of the list here for Hamas, because that then opens the door for all these other core issues that have not been resolved. Are we really looking at this tectonic shift, as you termed it?
I believe so. I've been involved in Palestine solidarity for 50 years, and I have never seen world public opinion so much in favor of the Palestinian cause as today. I think that after the general strike that took place in Palestine yesterday, people around the world realized that those artificial borders created to keep the Palestinians apart have no meaning to the Palestinians, and people see that the apartheid Israeli state is on its last legs and is approaching the end of its life. People know that the two-state solution, that was a fraud and a ploy, it's dead. People realize that we are on the cusp of a new possibility, a one democratic state in all of historic Palestine. So the fact that there was a general strike, that Hamas is sending many rockets into Israel, that the Israelis have evacuated the north of its colonies in the north of Palestine because they are afraid that Hezbollah might join the cause. We know that the situation has changed and there are new possibilities, and that's why there's a tectonic shift in world public opinion in favor of the Palestinian cause.
Okay, let's go with this notion of tectonic shift, and to use your words. One particular analyst said that just like apartheid South Africa, when there's a momentum where large numbers of countries begin to change their views on Israel and become anti-Israeli because of the fact that it's an apartheid regime, and it has done what it has done along with what has occurred in the past 10 days, which is the bombardment of the Gaza Strip, that's going to lead to the unraveling of this regime, just like it did with South Africa, something that the U.S. won't be able to prevent because that's its strongest ally. Do you see a similarity there, and for that to actually maybe something that may happen to the current Israel?
Yes, I was involved in the BDS campaign, which helped to overthrow the white apartheid rule in South Africa during the 1980s, and I can see today that BDS is having an effect on the apartheid regime in Israel as well. Countries around the world took action individually and at the United Nations in the 1980s to isolate and punish the apartheid regime in South Africa. I should point out that at that time, South Africa had one ally, clandestine covert ally in the world, and that was the State of Israel. And the State of Israel continued to sell arms to the apartheid regime in South Africa. Moreover, goods that were banned in other countries from apartheid South Africa were transshipped to Israel. And labels were put on saying product of Israel, and they were shipped out of Israel to the rest of the world. So Israel was an apartheid supporter when South Africa was under attack. The apartheid regime was under attack. And Israel has now shown itself to the rest of the world to be an apartheid regime, which calls itself a Jewish state, which only gives rights, certain rights, privileged rights to Jewish Israelis at the expense of all of its other citizens who are Palestinians of Christian or Muslim background and people who've immigrated or come as refugees.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it, Kent Stone. Kent Stone there, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton, Ontario. Thank you. Israeli forces have killed two more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank as people continue to protest the regime's deadly aggression against the Gaza Strip. Footage shows Israeli forces fatally shooting a Palestinian woman in Al-Khalil or Hebron over the alleged knife attack. This was the second Israeli killing there today. Separately, a Palestinian teenager was also killed in the city of Al-Fam, northwest of Jenin. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the city of Ramallah have laid to rest three people killed during protests there. Tensions are running high in the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem Al-Quds amid the deadly Israeli crackdown on Palestinians protesting against Israeli crimes. Over two dozen people have been killed in the occupied territory so far. The chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says the Israeli regime has suffered massive blows in its offensive against the Palestinians. Major General Hossein Salami said that Israel's aggression against Palestinians is doomed to fail. He said that any party standing by Israel will face a similar fate. Salami noted that a new Palestine has emerged as a missile-equipped nation and that Tehran will keep supporting the Palestinians' fight against Israel. He was addressing protesters who had gathered in Tehran's Imam Hussein Square to condemn the Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Demonstrators holding Palestinian flags expressed solidarity with the Palestinians. Anti-Israeli protests have been held in many countries since the regime launched its deadly aggression against the Palestinians. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. policy has perpetuated the crisis and atrocities of the Zionist regime occupation by unconditionally supporting the regime of Israel in three distinct ways, militarily, diplomatically, and politically. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by Miriam Benjamin and Nicholas J.S. Davis Writers. This article is published under the heading how the United States helps to kill Palestinians. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The U.S. corporate media usually report on the Israeli regime military assaults in occupied Palestine as if the United States is an innocent, neutral party to the conflict. In fact, large majorities of Americans have told pollsters for decades that they want the United States to be neutral in Israeli regime atrocities. But U.S. media and politicians betray their own lack of neutrality by blaming Palestinians for nearly all the violence and framing flagrantly disproportionate, indiscriminate, and therefore illegal Israeli attacks as a justifiable response to Palestinian actions. The classic formulation from U.S. officials and commentators is that Israel has the right to defend itself. Never Palestinians have the right to defend themselves, even as the Israelis massacre hundreds of Palestinian civilians, destroy thousands of Palestinian homes, and seize ever more Palestinian land. The disparity in casualties in Israeli regime assaults on Gaza speaks for itself. At the time of writing this article, the current Israeli regime assault on Gaza has killed at least 200 people, including 59 children and 35 women. In the 2008 to 2009 assault on Gaza, the Zionist regime killed 1,417 Palestinians, while their meager efforts to defend themselves killed 9 Israelis. In 2014, 2,251 Palestinians and 72 Israelis, mostly soldiers invading Gaza, were killed as U.S.-built F-16s dropped at least 5,000 bombs and missiles on Gaza, and Israeli tanks and artillery fired 49,500 shells, mostly massive 6-inch shells from U.S.-built M-109 howitzers. In response to largely peaceful March of Return protests at the Israel-Gaza border in 2018, Israeli regime snipers killed 183 Palestinians and wounded over 6,100, including 122 that required amputations, 21 paralyzed by spinal cord injuries, and 9 permanently blinded. As with the Saudi-led war on Yemen and other serious foreign policy problems, bias and distorted news coverage by U.S. corporate media leaves many Americans not knowing what to think. Many simply give up trying to sort out the rights and wrongs of what is happening and instead blame both sides and then focus their attention closer to home, where the problems of society impact them more directly and are easier to understand and do something about. So how should Americans respond to horrific images of bleeding, dying children and homes reduced to rubble in Gaza? The tragic relevance of this crisis for Americans is that behind the fog of war, propaganda and commercialized, biased media coverage, the United States bears an overwhelming share of responsibility for the carnage taking place in Palestine. U.S. policy has perpetuated the crisis and atrocities of the Zionist regime occupation by unconditionally supporting the regime of Israel in three distinct ways, militarily, diplomatically, and politically. On the military front, the United States has so far provided $146 billion in foreign aid, nearly all of it military-related. It currently provides $3.8 billion per year in military aid to the Zionist regime. In addition, the United States is the largest seller of weapons to the Israeli regime, whose military arsenal now includes 362 U.S.-built F-16 warplanes and 100 other U.S. military aircraft, including a growing fleet of the new F-35s, at least 45 Apache attack helicopters, 600 M109 howitzers, and 64 M270 rocket launchers. At this very moment, the Zionist regime is using many of these U.S.-supplied weapons in its devastating bombardment of Gaza. The U.S. military alliance with the Zionist regime also involves joint military exercises and joint production of Arrow missiles and other weapon systems. The U.S. and Israeli regime militaries have collaborated on drone technologies tested by the Israelis in Gaza. The U.S. military also maintains a $108 billion stockpile of weapons at six locations in occupied Palestine, pre-positioned for use in future U.S. wars in the West Asia region. During the Zionist regime assault on Gaza in 2014, even as the U.S. Congress suspended some weapons deliveries to Israel, it approved handing over stocks of 120mm mortar shells and 40mm grenade launcher ammunition from the U.S. stockpile for the Zionist regime to use against Palestinians in Gaza. Diplomatically, the United States has exercised its veto in the UN Security Council 82 times, and 44 of those vetoes have been to shield the Zionist regime from accountability for war crimes or human rights violations. In every single case, the United States has been the lone vote against the resolution, although a few other countries have occasionally abstained. It is only the United States' privileged position as a veto-wielding permanent member of the Security Council and its willingness to abuse that privilege to shield its ally, the Zionist regime, that gives it this unique power to stymie international efforts to hold the regime of Israel accountable for its actions under international law. The result of this unconditional U.S. diplomatic shielding of the Zionist regime has been to encourage increasingly barbaric Israeli treatment of the Palestinians. With the United States blocking any accountability in the Security Council, the Zionist regime has seized ever more Palestinian land in the West Bank and East Al-Quds, uprooted more and more Palestinians from their homes, and responded to the resistance of largely unarmed people with ever-increasing violence, detentions, and restrictions on day-to-day life. Thirdly, on the political front, AIPAC and other pro-Israel lobbying groups have exercised an extraordinary role in bribing and intimidating U.S. politicians to provide unconditional support for the Israeli regime. The roles of campaign contributors and lobbyists in the corrupt U.S. political system make the U.S. uniquely vulnerable to this kind of influence, peddling, and intimidation, whether it is by monopolistic corporations and industry groups like the military-industrial complex and Big Pharma, or well-funded interest groups like the NRA, AIPAC, and, in recent years, lobbies for Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. President Joe Biden, who has a long history of supporting Israeli regime crimes, responded to the latest massacre by insisting on Israel's right to defend itself and, inanely, hoping that this will be closing down sooner than later. His UN ambassador also shamefully blocked the call for a ceasefire at the UN Security Council. The silence and words from President Biden and most of representatives in Congress at the massacre of civilians and mass destruction of Gaza is unconscionable. The United States has played a vital and instrumental role in the decades-long catastrophe that has engulfed the people of Palestine.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
If you look at the plans for establishing the Zionist state, it goes back before the turn of the 19th century, before we entered the 1900s. The planning goes back to that time, according to the records that are available, and I don't know if it was there before that, and whose evil mind it came to first. Theodor Herzl, an Austrian Zionist that is considered at least one of the main people behind the whole idea of Zionism and having a Zionist government that officially rules over part of the world. And then they decided for it to be, they finalized it, and it was pretty clear they're going to go for Palestine. But anyway, that planning starts before we enter the 1900s, so it's over a century ago. Okay, you see the official announcement made of what they call the establishment of the Zionist state, Israel, in before 1950. Now we are in 2021. As you can see, despite the advancements of the Muqawama and the resistance led by the government of resistance, the Islamic Republic, and all the believers who have joined the cause of resisting kufr and tughyan, rebellion against God, and against people, those who've joined that cause, they are part of it in the form of organizations, armed organizations like Hezbollah, like Hamas, like Jihad al-Islami, like Ansarullah, like Hashd al-Sha'bi, like the Syrian movement, like Fatimiyun, like Zainabiyun. All of these are part of the movement of Muqawam, the resistance. Because of their work, obviously, what they had initially planned has not taken place. The point that I'm trying to make right now, we're explaining, إِنَّهُمْ يَكِيدُونَ كَيْدًا. Their plotting is very serious. They don't give up. With the expansion of this so-called Zionist state, what they call Israel, they haven't given up. MBS is part of the new figures that have joined and align themselves, fools that think that this project is going to help them. They don't realize shayateen abuse you. They don't even use you. They abuse you. Anyone, even each other. That's what the Quran tells us in Surah Al-Hashr. They abuse each other. إِنَّهُمْ يَكِيدُونَ كَيْدًا. Or regarding the revolution, they're CIA agents, Mossad agents were helping Savak before the revolution to make sure they destroy the whole religious backbone and the spine of Muslimin in general, in Iran particularly, the Hawza. They tried to do that before the revolution. And with Imam Khomeini specifically, they tried to get him out of and get him to not to continue and pursue this. They tried everything. Before the revolution, there's a lot of measures they took. When the revolution succeeded after a few months, they started plotting against it. For 42 years or so, they have been plotting and planning against the Islamic Republic. They have been defeated over and over and over and over. The thing is, has it stopped? No, that's what this word. إِنَّهُمْ يَكِيدُونَ كَيْدًا. They keep plotting. They assassinate Hajj Qasim and Hajj Abu Mahdi. before that they had assassinated others. They are the ones responsible for the assassination of Shahid Mutahhari, for the assassination of Shahid Beheshti. They're all, it's all there covertly. They're the ones responsible. They've had all these assassinations. Did it succeed? No. But did they stop? Innahum yakiduna kaido. Very serious in their planning and plotting. They keep going. And they don't give up. They keep going. That's what we see, right, with regards to the Palestinians. When we're discussing what the believers and the Muqawama is doing, it's important to see their work and how they have defeated. Right now, we're focusing on the Zionists themselves. Innahum yakiduna kaida. They keep plotting. God knows how many plots have been there, in what ways, who's been involved. They've gotten entire organizations that were armed against the Zionists to mellow down and to go to Oslo and to make an agreement with the Zionist state after all the shuhada that gave their lives to protect Palestine. Some of those leaders over time, they lost their stamina and the whole organization gave in to accepting Israel as a state, which doesn't really exist. That's just a title given. And they've continued. They've continued with Hamas. Do you think for Ismail Haniyeh and the other believers there to be steadfast on this path, do you think it's not a jihad? Do you think only the missiles being launched are the believers on the front lines that are launching those missiles and getting killed there are the only ones that are doing jihad, and the politicians of Hamas, the political figures like Ismail Haniyeh, who was probably once upon a time in the battlefield himself, but the likes of him, do you think it's not a jihad? Do you know how much pressure there's on them to agree to accept Israel as a state? How much pressure when something like this arises, how much pressure there is, and they use MBS, they use Saudi, they use Egypt, they use every possible means you could think of and things that we can't think of to pressure the political figures to agree to something for them to stop the mujahideen on the front lines. There's a line Imam Khomeini has in one of the, I heard this from some of the believers who were, it's recorded, it's online, you can find it. Some of those who were fighting in the war against Saddam, when Saddam was unleashed against the Islamic Republic. In one of those operations that they had, it became very difficult. There was contact between Imam Khomeini and the commanders in the war front, people who were commanding the believers. And the line that they were explaining how difficult it was and so on, Imam Khomeini told them to tell the believers that we are standing, you stand as well. Those believers are there, there's bullets coming their way. Imam Khomeini says, we're standing, you stand as well. He doesn't say, you guys stand, like he's relaxed back there. It looks like he's not in the battlefield. They are, but that's not the case. The battle he's dealing with is more, if the politicians give in, those believers on the front line can't do anything. They can't do anything. They would have to withdraw. They need the politicians to fight. If the politicians fight, if the leadership fights, if the leadership doesn't give in to the pressures, which are more difficult than bullets to take. The plots of the Zionists are very, they've been very strong, pressed very hard, so many different ways that we don't even know half of them. And the deception. Innahum yakiduna kaida. Now, this is explaining that part of the verse. We see it. We said it doesn't need too much explanation, but I guess we did because the comparison is important. Innahum yakiduna kaida. God says, yes, innahum yakiduna kaida. But he follows up, wa akidu kaida.
No mother, no father to wipe away my tears. That's why I will cry. I feel scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt the battle is thine. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The door is open for U.S. drone sales to authoritarian countries like the United Arab Emirates, says Sarah Sirota, reporter, in an article titled, After Slamming Trump, U.S. Lawmakers Silent on Biden Drone Export Policy. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. When the Trump administration announced last July it was loosening decades-old restrictions on military drone exports, the top Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee came out swinging. Progressive Democrats pounced and introduced legislation to reverse the decision. The new policy, they correctly warned, opened the door for sales to authoritarian countries like the United Arab Emirates that Democratic and Republican administrations alike had denied since the Reagan era. As we explore the repercussions of today's announcement on our broader foreign policy goals and our national security interests, Senator Robert Menendez said of the Trump administration's July 24th announcement, this reckless decision once again makes it more likely that we will export some of our most deadly weaponry to human rights abusers across the world. This is yet another reckless move by an administration fixated with eliminating the international cooperation. Now, in a real position to influence policy as chair of the committee, thanks to two runoff elections in Georgia that few analysts expected would both result in Democratic victories, Menendez has been silent on the issue. Reuters reported on March 25th that the Biden-led National Security Council is looking to keep the shift in place and eventually form a new international agreement to guide drone exports, enabling deals selling General Atomics MQ-9B drones to Taiwan and the UAE, which the State Department authorized in the twilight of Trump's presidency to proceed. It would be an extension of the decision made by the Trump State Department to no longer observe the international missile technology control regime's strong presumption of denial standard for exports of the most sophisticated drones on the market and instead invoke its national discretion. Reports such as Reuters often emerge as a trial balloon, testing whether a new policy will engender public pushback. This one didn't. The chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, an outspoken hawk, made no public statements in the wake of this news. No press releases, no rebukes on social media. That's despite the UAE's airstrikes against civilians in Yemen and Menendez's numerous criticisms of arms sales to the Emirates, as well as his notable effort in 2019 to block the Trump administration's attempt to greenlight billions of dollars in exports without congressional approval by declaring a national emergency. Concerns about the former president's drive to sell MQ-9s to the UAE also motivated a bipartisan group of senators to support a new bill in the weeks after the State Department announced the MTCR policy change that would counteract its aims. The bill, introduced by Senator Chris Murphy, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and co-sponsored by Senators Chris Coons, Mike Lee, Ron Paul, and Bernie Sanders, would prevent exports of sophisticated military drones, with an exception made for NATO members and other close allies. According to Juan Packen, a spokesperson for Menendez and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's Democratic majority, the panel's team has instead worked behind the scenes on the issue, telling The Intercept in an email recently, "The Senate Foreign Relations staff has in fact continued making several inquiries into the State Department regarding the MTCR policy change, as it continues to be of great concern to Chairman Menendez." Packen said the inquiries were sent in the past few months, but declined to share copies. The Democrats' dominant voice on foreign policy matters in the Senate didn't stick his neck out when his party's leader, finally in a position to reverse a reckless policy change, declined to do so, and neither did the rank and file. Indeed, no lawmaker who opposed the Trump administration's decision or called attention to the former president's extreme approach to arms sales has publicly derided the Biden-led White House's reported plan to continue authorizing exports of advanced military drones using its own discretion rather than a strong presumption of denial per MTCR guidelines. Murphy, Coons, and even Sanders, perhaps the Senate's most vocal critic of U.S. support for the war in Yemen, have stayed quiet. A congressional staffer told The Intercept in an email recently that Murphy does continue to have concerns about loosening restrictions on drone exports and has raised these concerns directly with the White House. The staffer did not immediately reply to a request for more detail about specific actions Murphy has taken, though. A spokesperson for Coons did not respond to an email about the senator's position on the news report that Biden intends to preserve Trump's policy change. A spokesperson for Sanders did not provide a comment by press time. The stakes couldn't be higher. Not only did this policy change open the door to proliferation of some of U.S. most lethal spying capabilities, it undermined an important international framework for curbing the global spread of deadly cruise missiles. Especially given the Biden administration's intention to keep his predecessor's plan to focus on economic competition rather than human rights or security, may open the door to eventual leniencies on exports of increasingly destructive military capabilities like cruise missiles. Further, the State Department has not yet revealed whether the policy change allows cooperative development and production opportunities with customers' native manufacturers, which some trade advocates have pushed for. Meanwhile, American companies and trade groups have kept up their lobbying campaigns to influence policy. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for example, lists unmanned aerial systems and the U.S. Conventional Arms Transfer Policy, or CATP, under which the Trump administration originally announced its intention to expand U.S. drone exports in 2018, as among its top lobbying issues in a filing with the House of Representatives for the first quarter of 2021. The Aerospace Industries Association also lists CATP as one of its core issues during the same time frame per a lobbying disclosure. During the first quarter, General Atomics had contracts worth tens of thousands of dollars with lobbying firm American Defense International, which would secure meetings on UAVs and foreign weapon sales, and Atlantic Strategies Group, which would gain support for foreign military sale funding for drones, according to public records. The Political Action Committee for the company has also donated thousands of dollars to Menendez. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on May 7, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of the International Al-Quds Day. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his speech on the occasion of International Quds Day, referring to the change in the balance of power in favor of Islamic world and Palestine, emphasized, I tell you with confidence the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and will not stop.
The electoral events in the U.S. and the notoriously scandalous failures of the hubristic and arrogant managers in that country, the unsuccessful one-year fight against the pandemic in the U.S. and Europe, and the embarrassing incidents that ensued, and also the recent political and social instabilities in the most important European countries, are all signs of the downward movement of the Western camp. On the other hand, the growth of the resistance forces in the most sensitive Islamic regions, the development of their defensive and offensive capabilities, their growth of self-awareness, motivation, and hope in Muslim nations, the increasing tendency to follow Islamic and Quranic slogans, and the growth of independence and self-reliance in nations are auspicious signs of a better future.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
In this auspicious future, cooperation between Muslim countries should be a main and fundamental goal, and this does not seem unlikely. The pivot around which this cooperation turns is the issue of Palestine, the entirety of that country, and the fate of Holy Quds. This is the same truth that guided the enlightened heart of the great Imam Khomeini, may God bestow mercy upon him, towards the announcement of International Quds Day on the last Friday of Ramadan. Cooperation between Muslims around the pivot of Holy Quds is an absolute nightmare for the Zionists and for their American and European advocates. The failed project called the Deal of the Century and the effort to normalize the relations between a few weak Arab governments and the Zionist regime were desperate attempts to run away from that nightmare.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.